mine is the highest it's ever been since I've lived here.
What do we got that's new tonight that we haven't seen?
I'd like to call the meeting to order. Chief, would you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Could I have a brief moment of silence? Thank you. Are there any additions or deletions on the agenda? Hearing none, what's the pleasure of the council?
Make a motion, we approve the agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Comments on minutes?
Yeah, I have some comments. On the section, paragraph 3 on the fourth or fifth page, I believe, the fifth page, a motion that I made to send a letter to Senator Vaughn, I think we need to express what was in the letter to a certain extent because it was nobody knows why it didn't pass in the minutes. And so I would add that the letter was sent as an apology to Senator Vaughn and Representative Ennis and that it did not represent what the council believed was the opinion of Mr. Schaefer.
Anything else? All in favor?
Do we have a motion?
Does anyone want to make a motion?
Do we need a motion? Well, I move that those comments be added to the minutes.
I'll second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I don't have anything, Mr. Jaywork?
I have nothing there.
Chief?
Where are you having your... You have in your possession a copy of my report this evening. We did test for dispatchers on Saturday. We had 53 applicants test. We'll be proceeding with the selection process from there. Just a note on request for law enforcement assistance in the area of Louisiana and Mississippi. So far, no officers from Delaware have responded to the affected area. Colonel McLeish from the Delaware State Police will be heading up and organizing any type of assistance for that area. He envisions a group of 40 to 60 officers from Delaware going down. Obviously, they would all be volunteers. Deployments would be for a 15-day deployment with travel on either end of the 15 days. I also noted, just for council's information, that as of right now, there are a number of Smyrna police officers who have volunteered to go, who would like to be able to go. However, with two officers in full-time canine training right now, I just don't believe we have anybody available. If this request comes through and a task force is sent down after our officers are out of training, we might consider it at that point. Obviously, we do want to assist, but not at the expense of... the citizens of the town of Smyrna. Also indicated that we've selected a high school intern for our high school intern program, Timothy Scott Radcliffe of Hollitz Corner Road. He's a senior at Polytech High School. He's working out very well for us. Lieutenant Boardley is in the process of finalizing our citizens auxiliary patrol policies so we can begin the selection process for that. It will be an all-volunteer group that will assist in such activities as Community Watch. We're hoping that we'll have some that will be able to assist us with answering non-emergency phone calls and greeting visitors to our lobby. That's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Hugg?
Thank you. My report is in your packet. I do want to call your attention to two items, one of which I think was on the council table or on the sign-in table. The town of Smyrna will begin fluoridating our drinking water beginning October 1st. You may remember that some numbers of years ago, the state passed legislation requiring public water systems to add fluoride. The town got a grant from the Division of Public Health, and as part of the Gardenside well system, the fluoridation facility was added. We've had some troubles getting that equipment up and properly working. It has now been approved by Public Health, and so we will be fluoridating water beginning October 1st. We have, in addition to a number of handouts, we'll have information in the Smyrna Clayton Sun-Times. We have sent notices to pediatricians and dentists in the Smyrna area. Also have sent notices to the schools, to the school nurses, to try and get the word out to folks that we will be adding fluoride to the water. The second item I want to call to council's attention is that the fall cleanup is now set for the week of October 11th through 14th, with the possibility of extending it into the next week. This is the fall major cleanup. Most items will be picked up except items that contain hazardous material, tires, and construction debris. And I think that's the only additions.
Can I make a comment?
Sure.
About fluoridation, I would really put the word out to everybody's relatives. And I've been a doc here for 16 years, and I'm constantly passing out fluoridated vitamins to infants. We don't want to do that anymore if the water is fluoridated. So anybody who's under the Smyrna water system, at what date was it?
October 1st.
October 1st, should not give their children fluorinated vitamins. I think that word should go out to everyone. If you have a well, I don't know how many people in the Smyrna area have wells, but then you're not going to have fluorine. So, and I see this as a step forward.
Should also remind people that have home water treatments to check to make sure that their systems don't remove fluoride. Some home water treatment systems do. So if you're taking fluoride and discontinue fluoride but have a water treatment system, you may want to make sure that, in fact, fluoride is not being removed.
Thank you. Any committee reports?
I'd just like to say the Long Range Planning Committee is meeting at the last Wednesday of the month, and we welcome everyone and join our happy committee.
Any other committee reports? Now is the time on the agenda for the members of the audience to address the council. I'd like to invite you to do so. Yes, sir. Mr. Bowser, take your time.
I'd just like to speak very briefly about some things, two items that we've been looking at. And those are the two subjects. Rules of order, and of course the Ethics Committee. I just want to say just a few things. First, Robert's Rules of Order is apparent that some such plan should be part of the proceedings. Seminars should be held for the council and others and administrators. It's important to have a parliamentarian on this committee or take it up. In fact, we could probably move ahead with this if we have Mr. Jaywork be the parliamentarian for a brief time until this gets going. The ethics really is a very basic thing. You do what's right. You do what's right. Now, if you don't know what's right, then that's a problem. But people like the council should take some kind of an oath. For example, the physicians take the oath that I will do no harm to my patients. And this should be put in the ethical statement of the, on the committee. The priority, the ethical committee has to stand in law alone against in the organizational plan of the town or the business or whatever it is. The ethical committee stands out there alone so that it's not tampered with. It's kind of, I don't have any powers to push this. Things that I've known and so on and so forth. This is kind of like a little thing I'd like to see. Okay?
Thank you, sir. Anyone else? Yes, sir. I'm going to go first, and we'll get to you next. Just give your name and address for the record, please.
My name is Charles Hall. I live at 900 Appleberry Drive in the Bonaire adult community. And I once again want to address not only electric bills that were so high, but what I'd like the council to do is to begin to hold open hearings on reducing the trash collection in the town of Smyrna to once a week and for the savings to be passed on to the citizens of Smyrna. We can live with one trash collection once a week. We can also live with a reduction with the intended increases that this other letter from the DEMC brought out. We can expect higher gas bills this year, higher electric bills this year. Gasoline is not going down. Medicare is going up 10% in the upcoming year. And as senior citizens, we need a break. And I think one way that the town council can do that is to eliminate one of the trash collections that we get. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes, sir.
Hello, my name's Joe Renzi. I'm from BCP, the car dealership here, and I really don't know where to start. I come in contact with a lot of the local people and small businesses and things, and everybody's complaining about the same thing. Their electric bills are outrageous. And so I took a couple weeks and looked into getting some comparisons. And, these aren't exact science, but I'm finding our bills here in Smyrna are 3 to 4% higher than anywhere else in the state. And as a matter of fact, we're higher than New York City. I think we need some explanation where our money's going, why it's so high. We're not the only town that buys electric. Matter of fact, we buy electric up in Wilmington also. And I priced a 900 square foot townhouse in Smyrna with one person using the air condition. The facility. Going by at nights, it looks like a ghost town. It looks like we're in the old ages. Nobody puts lights on around here. You go one thing, the same house, lights on all over the place. Four times the square footage I had to get to get with three air conditioning compressors to be the same bill as a 900 square foot here with one air condition with no lights on. Something's just not right. I think we're getting gouged here. I've heard all kinds of horror stories. I don't want to make this meeting long. I think everybody needs to speak up about this. I think it's more than just the electric bill, too. Another comparison. I have a gentleman that works for me on Commerce Street. The bills there 2 years ago were $22 to $71 a month. He's a very conservative guy. He works 14 hours a day. He watches his TV at nights and sleeps with the windows open.
His average bill now is $450 a month ever since we put the new meters in. These meters had to cost $10,000 apiece. I don't know how the bill would go from an average of $40 to $450 a month. They check out the meter, so the meter's fine. I've had the electric company check everything. I had Toll Brothers come in and checked all the electric meters. Everything's perfect. There's no explanation why the bills jump 1,000%. You know, this poor guy's getting paid $10 an hour, and there's not a lot of jobs that support the electric bills in this community. And everybody says, well, you don't pay any taxes. I also check the taxes. Our taxes aren't any less here than anywhere else in the state. I mean, yeah, if you're looking at a $400,000 home in Wilmington and comparing it to a $150,000 house here, yeah, they're different, but you're looking at two different values of real estate. But if you take the same value of real estate, and I checked a couple commercial properties in Smyrna, and I had the same appraisals done in Rehoboth and Wilmington, we're paying the same taxes, a little bit more actually I'm paying here than the same facility up in Wilmington. So, you know, that's not a good argument either. The donut shop. I acquired the donut shop 8 months ago. Previous bills, $150, $220, so forth and so on. I got a bill before the increase of $1,250. So I called the people, come out and check the meters. This is since the new meter's going on, I guess. Everything runs right. We put a new meter on. We ship this one to somebody probably in Bon Air. The bill's, everything's accurate. So I said, well, I'll tell you what I do. I can't afford to keep the shop open because I can't afford the electric bill in Smyrna. So I cut off the third shift, fired 8 people. Well, I didn't fire them. They quit. So we're down from 12 people, from 10 people to 2 people. The electric bill is still $1,250. I cut off the third shift, cut the second shift in half. I'm working under candle power. I run one AC unit at 78 degrees during the daytime. My bill reads as this. My electric use is $357. My PAC, whatever that means, additional markup, I guess, is $400. And my demand meter is $400. So I got 3 electric bills. So the demand meter, where does that money go? Does anybody have an idea what that means? Where does that money go? I have no clue, but I know when I add the demand meter, my electric bill is $357. I'm paying $403 for a demand builder. I'm demanding $403 to use $357 for electric. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. I encourage a lot of people to come to Smyrna to live. As a matter of fact, a lot of the builders that are building here right now are friends of mine. My wife's part of them and so forth and so on. I think we need to put a warning in the paper. If you bring your kids to Smyrna, beware of the electric bills. You know, it's not, if something's not right, we need to look into it. I'm not sure who voted to raise them or who votes what, but we need to unvote for it. Let's see, another thing I had about, another example. Yeah, my one business over there, I got 5 different electric bills for. Each one has a demand meter to it. And the demand part of my electric bill over there was, geez, almost $1,200. You know, I don't know what it's for. You know, never questioned it before. But now I'm getting all my employees are all complaining. Everybody's complained about it. And then I started looking to it. I've talked to Mike Castle about it. He says, geez, we're the highest in 5 states that I can see. He says, I'm still searching. You know, I've called the town. They're very nice, and they're accommodating. But it's hard for them to really explain why this guy on Commerce Street went from $40 to $450. I have a guy that works in the shop. He's got a one-bedroom efficiency. He's in the reserves, and he works for me. He's paying $4-something a month. He watches TV at night when he comes home, he says. Yeah, it's impossible. I mean, it just seems outrageous. And I'm not sure if a lot of... If it's these meters that aren't right, or maybe we're gouging the prices, but you know,
I think it's how the power is purchased. I mean,
well, everybody purchases power.
Well, Joe, we want to try to keep everybody to a reasonable amount of time, and you have those are great comments. I was going to make a suggestion. Mr. Hug, Pat McCullough is working currently on a spreadsheet for me to give us an idea where we are with other municipalities in the state. Could we try to get those numbers for the next meeting? Well, I do.
It's a lot different.
Because I haven't seen that comparison in about 4 years, and I'd like to see it again. And because I can't give you a reasonable answer, I'm not able to do it.
Yeah, I've showed this electric bill to people, and they just said, "What is that? It looks like you're paying three times for the same usage." And not only that, the usage itself is, I know, is way off. Now, how do I go in to correct that? Who do I address? You know, James is a very nice guy, but he says, well, it is what it is. I said, well, I know it's not that.
You had the electric company out to the townhouse?
I've had them out to several places. I've had them out to several of my employees' place because they were complaining about their electric.
Can Sam not put some sort of peak? What is that instrument he has?
I've had that, the demand thing, yeah. The guys came out, and they said, well, the story they said, well, the reason why your demand meter is shooting through the roof is because you're cooking. And I said, well, all right, I'll kill the cook. I'll get rid of the cooks. Got rid of the – haven't cooked anything. The only thing we do is heat coffee. And my demand meter went up from when I – 2 years ago it was $80. Now it's $403. So, you know, that's pretty potent coffee.
We'll try to get you an answer in the next day or two.
I'm getting to the point where, you know, I'm getting ready to build a new building. What do I, you know, maybe I got to look at another way to put electric in there. I don't know what I can do. But it's scary thinking about the investment I'm going to make and what it's going to cost me. My electrics will be higher than the mortgage. So, All right,
thank you. Anyone else?
I'd like to just, in reference to what Mr. Renzi said, ask Mr. Hug two questions. Number one, Mr. Hug, this DMEC wholesale power cost summary that you included in our packet seems to indicate to me that between January of this year and August of this year, we went from $47 a megawatt to $89, which represents almost a doubling. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And that's our actual cost that the town has to pay.
That's our actual cost. Let me comment on a couple of those points. Just maybe it'll short-circuit some of the other concerns. The town of Smyrna buys its electric as one of nine members of DMAC. We buy it in bulk. The combined usage of the seven members who have the contract is roughly 300 megawatts on a peak day. We are a relatively small purchaser in that group. We generate electricity, we buy electricity in the day-ahead spot market, and we take hedges against electric prices, particularly during the summer months. In January of this year, the all-out cost to the members of DMAC for a megawatt of electricity was $47.65. The cost that we paid on average in August of this year was $89.89 a megawatt hour. And I will tell you that the first 5 days of August, we were at 113 plus, and we averaged over $100 a megawatt cost for that first week. Now that means, quite frankly, that the energy cost that we pay to buy electricity for you, as Mr. Cahill said, essentially doubled. This is not something that we had anything to do with. It's simply the bill we get for the megawatts of energy that you all use. It's no different than when you go to the gas station and the price of gasoline went from $2.50 to $3. The price of wholesale energy went from $47 to almost $90 in 7 months. That is a fact. That is not something that we can manipulate or do much else about. That is a price that we get. We want the energy, we have to pay for it. You don't want the energy, turn the lights out. It's that simple. There is no alternative, quite frankly. No, wait a minute. There is.
Hold on.
No. Well, you might be walking in the dark. You're also paying $3 a gallon for gasoline, and you know I can't. Well, yes, it does. The price of gasoline, the price of natural gas, the price of heating oil, all of those things are related to the cost of energy.
Why do people with big homes down the road pay $60 some for a dollar worth of coal?
Yeah, wait a minute. You're confusing me. I want I'm trying to tell you that the wholesale price of energy that we buy, what it costs us to buy energy from DMAC, what it costs Milford to buy energy from DMAC, Delaware Co-op buys from a three co-op group of purchasers, don't they?
Can I jump in here?
Yeah, you know that one.
I can answer this. I can answer this a little bit for you. One of the big differences between DMAC and Delaware Cooperative is that DMAC buys all its power on the spot market. They have no generation capacity, so they're at the mercy of whatever the price of energy is selling for. Old Dominion Electric Cooperative, of which Delaware Electric Cooperative purchases its power, first of all, it's a much, much bigger organization. They have much more leverage, but they also own generating capacity. Now, they buy about 47% of their power on the spot market, and I can assure you that they are already having price increases. They're expecting, DEC, Delaware Electric Cooperative, is expecting a price increase in the cost of the power it sells, which will hit their consumers probably in December or January. They're going to get it in October. Because of administrative things, they can't get it through, pass it on to the customer. But it's coming. So that's one reason why the town of Smyrna and DMEC has to pay more for power. They don't have the leverage that the cooperative has, and they don't have any generating capacity.
Should also add that Delmarva Power and Light, also known as Connective, is under a rate restriction imposed, 4 or 5 years ago, Terry, now by the Public Service Commission that expires next year. DP&L expects their rates to run up about 50% as soon as that rate cover comes off. So you aren't comparing apples and apples. You have different kinds of purchasing and rate structures. The second point I want to make is that, and Mr. Renzi will be glad to sit down with you and try to explain this in detail, commercial customers, the rate structure in the town of Smyrna, commercial customers pay a demand charge. A demand charge is based on your peak usage. You know, if you operate 1 hour or 24 hours, your peak hour is what drives your energy costs. That's the rate that's been established by this council back in 1996. It hasn't been changed.
Why is it going up so much? Why is it going up 100%?
It also goes up as a result of the cost of energy. But it's based on your peak hour. Understand that, and our rate structure may be different from other communities. But I can also tell you that our rate structure is 45 cents a kilowatt hour, and that was set in 1996 and has not been changed. So, you know, I've heard this comment that we're raising our rates, and we have not raised our rates since 1996. It produces about 45 megawatts of the total 300 megawatt or so usage that the DMAC customers use. Now, I mean, it saves us from buying that amount of energy on the spot market. But I should also tell you it's a natural gas-fired plant. Natural gas is selling at about $10 a million BTUs right now. That's about four times what it was selling for this time last year. Again, we have no influence over that cost. That's what the cost is. We also get interrupted in probably December and have to burn fuel oil. Fuel oil, as of yesterday, was forecasted at over $3 this winter. So the bottom line is that there is no easy answer here. There is no way to, you know, no magic bullet to go in and tweak the plant and get more out of it or cut its cost. It costs us $75 to $80 a megawatt to run that plant. You don't run it when you can buy energy cheaper.
Mr. Mayor, if I could.
Yes.
Sir, before you ask your question, maybe Mr. Hugger or I, one of us can muddle through an explanation for the bill. Basically, all electric bills have several components. This might help you, Mr. Renzi. Most electric bills have what's called a customer charge, and it's usually a flat rate, like $5, $6, $7, and that's to cover basically the administrative costs for the staff sending out the bills and all that stuff. Then you have an energy charge, which is based on the kilowatt hours. That's the amount of – think of this as a pipe with water flowing through it. The kilowatt hours is the energy flowing through the pipe, and you pay so much per kilowatt hour. That's the energy charge. And you can save money on that, as Mr. Hook said, by turning off the lights, turning off the air conditioner. another component, the third component, is called the demand charge, which is what they were talking about. And as Mr. Hugg said, that doesn't matter how much energy you're using a week. It means how much energy did you use at the peak time of energy consumption for that particular billing period. I don't know if you...
That's correct. Because so we have to be able to provide you with that amount of energy at that peak period.
If you have the misfortune of being in like some sort of a commercial business or industry where you have to throw on the switch, well, just at home. If you turn on your clothes dryer in the middle of the day when it's 95 degrees, although you don't have a demand charge because you're residential, you are adding to that demand. And the demand charge means that the electric, not the this company, but the big companies, DP&L, the people that generate and transmit the power, have to build that pipe this big because for that 1 hour of 1 year, all that electricity's got to flow through it. And that's the demand charge. That's paying for the big pipe. Okay? And that charge, again, for commercial, the meters are set up. When they talk about demand meters, they're set up so that they find out when, what time of the day, what time of the week, what time of the month or year, you as a customer hit that demand peak, and you really get socked for it. The Dell Electric Co-op and a lot of companies have what are called load shaving things, where they will actually turn off your hot water heater or your air conditioner if you sign up voluntarily in the program, so that you don't run these things at those peak times to save money. And then the fourth part of your bill, maybe there's some other ones, the PCA. That's called the power cost adjustment, and that's basically a pass-through mechanism. There's a base rate for the energy, and then to the extent that the town has to pay a higher bill, it's just a mathematical equation that just passes it right through to you.
Well, wait a minute. Let's come to the microphone if we're going to make a comment. Give your name and address for the record.
John Flynn, 732 Radnor Lane. I don't know how true it is, but I heard Smyrna charges three times as much for electricity to us than what they pay for it.
No.
Four times as much, whatever.
Answer that.
And what's that TPAC or whatever the hell that is? Mine went from $8 to $52 a month. The water, I ain't never got a regular water bill since I've been here. It's always excess water bills. So this month it wasn't too bad. It was only $13.75. But the sewer rate went up to $20 and something. Then the electricity, like they're saying, you're charging us more for the electricity because it costs more. Then we're turning around paying a penalty on the other end for using so much. We're paying a penalty that we shouldn't be paying on the other end. It's just getting outrageous. With all the people that's moving in this area, that should help take care of some of the cost, because the more people move in, the more people use the stuff, the more money you make. I think it's outrageous. There's got to be some way that you can correct this to help us out, because we're not going to be able to pay these bills. And like he's saying, shut off your air condition and your electric. Does that sound right for senior citizens to have to do that, or anybody? Anybody in this country, they're supposed to have the right to do to electricity and stuff. That just don't make sense. I think we got to find out who on city council voted for these raises and let the public know. That's what I think we have to do. And then when election comes, we can do something about it. Because I think you're trying to make too much money too fast on a little bit of people that's here now, when you got more people moving in here every day to help offset the cost of this. Thank you.
That's a good point, but I think this town, as well as you guys, are being looted by the power companies. It's not just the town; it's everybody.
But the town's
the gas station. We're reflecting the same price that the gas stations are reflecting, but out of our control.
Okay? All right, I agree with you there. We're paying that on the cost of electricity to start with. Then you're turning around putting a raise on the other thing for the cost, it's extra cost it's costing you. We're already paying that cost in the electric bill without that other damn thing on darn thing on there.
Mr. Flynn, if I may for a second. Mr. Flynn, hi. I voted for the recent price increase that got passed on, 50 cents on the garbage, a sewer increase, a water increase, and an electrical increase.
Good.
And the reason that, and I, the majority of the council did, now I'll speak for myself, the reason I voted for these things was because our cost went up. Now, we could have played a shell game and said, well, we're going to pretend these costs didn't go up and we'll just take it out of the other pocket. But if we take it out of the other pocket, the money is always the same. My personal feeling and the reason that I voted to go this way is because at least that gives the people an honest understanding of what the actual costs are. But the increase, the second thing I want to say is that the increase in the cost, so if you're mad at me, I'm one of the guys who voted,
no,
and I'm sorry.
I'm mad at all of you if you all voted for it.
I think what we're really all mad at is the electric bills. Because
especially when you're putting that PP, whatever the hell that other thing is, on the end. You raise that from $8 to $52 on me. I'm already paying an increase in electric to start with without having to pay that.
I certainly understand. I think there's one facet of this that we can do nothing about, and that is that the genuine increases that we are given as a town must eventually be passed on to the consumer one way or the other. No matter which pocket we take it out, it's going to take more of your money to get that electric. However, the one thing with our electric is, David, Mr. Hugg, this is what percentage? I understand that our electric here in Smyrna is a revenue-producing design. In other words, we don't just charge exactly what it costs us for the electric to produce it and supply it to the customer, but we also have, in effect, a profit figure on top of that. And in those profits, the profits then go to pay for the general fund, the general needs of the town. Now, one way or the other, we're going to get taxed. It's just a matter of where we get taxed. And my personal take on this in the beginning has been, I don't like that system. I would much rather see us go to a cost period with the electric, especially when we're seeing these kind of increases. But what we're going to have to do is find another place to take it, and that would be property taxes. Now, the good thing about going with property taxes is homeowners could then write it off in their income tax forms deduction, which you can't do with an electric surcharge. The second benefit I think it would do is it would tend to stretch the extra costs out over 12 months. It becomes part of your mortgage, and then you know it's going to be $123 every month for your property taxes instead of having it added in with the electric. And that's, I think, probably the only part of this that the town council really has any control over. But it's something I'd like to see us look into, and I'll discuss this later on.
And this ain't as bad as electricity and stuff, but the water and sewer rates. I come from New Castle County, Wilmington, and we paid it every quarter. And we paid $35 a month. In the 46 years I lived up in that area, I never had an excess water bill. Down here, you're getting them all the time because you're paying it once a month. It's supposed to be $10 and $15. They never got away with no $10.15, so they must not allow you enough water down here. I don't know what they allow you, but compared to New Castle County, everything down here is much higher.
Even the
damn TV costs more down here.
There's one more factor I'd like to bring up in that discussion, and that's that taxing this way by adding it into our electric becomes a regressive tax. In other words, it puts a much higher burden on the elderly and the poor, and those with the least end up paying the greatest percentage of this.
It's going to drive them out of business.
Yes.
The cost of the energy and everything. And I don't understand, in Wilmington, they have a city council and everything, and they vote on, they control the TV people, where if they want to raise, they got to go to city council to be approved for the raises. Electricity's got to be approved by the city council and stuff. You should check into some of them things and see what they do. Down here, it seems like whatever anybody wants to do, they get away with. You know what I mean? There don't seem to be anybody under control of anything down here. Somebody walks in, wants to sell something for $100,000, it seems like they can do it. That's all I had to say. It's a very unfair, and you're killing the town of Smyrna.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, my name is Betty Hall, and I live also at 900 Appleberry. I understand Jay Work's explanation of how our bill comes together, but I want to suggest that there be an investigation or a committee that will go back to the fundamentals, and that's how and where we buy our power, because that seems to be the only thing that is flexible. I don't know if, you know, the setup right now with how we're buying our power, but isn't there a way of finding out where there is cheaper power that could be available to us?
I can address that a little bit. I can tell you that quite a few years ago, the sole supplier for the town was DP&L.
Yeah.
At that time, DP&L was making a tremendous profit off the town. And a number of towns, nine towns specifically, went together to form this DMEC organization so they would be able to become their own purchase for themselves and cut out the middleman, so to speak.
Okay.
Right now, I think they were probably in like a 1.5-2 year commitment. I think we'd have to continue to buy power from DMEC for at least 1.5 or 2 years under contract.
Well, our current contract with Constellation Power, I think, runs out. I believe it's a 17-month contract. I think it runs out sometime next year. What we do, so that people understand, DMEC has a board of directors. It's made up of a representative of each of the municipalities that own the power plant and are members of the organization.
I think it should be said that DMEC is a nonprofit organization.
It's a nonprofit organization. Other than a very modest administrative cost, they only have a staff of three. Which includes the operator of the plant. Each year or so, we go to the open market with requests for proposals, ask for power. We ask for a block of power, and then we ask for it in various alternative purchasing modes. You can buy power in a number of different ways. You can buy it in the spot market, which basically means you're going out and saying, I'm going to buy it today at whatever the cost is. Or you can buy it in the day-ahead market, which means you're going to guess what it's going to be tomorrow and make an offer, and hopefully somebody will sell it to you. That is to some degree a little risky, but it also gives you the greatest flexibility in terms of when power goes up or down, because you get the benefit of whether that price is up or down. You can also buy what are called hedges, which is you go to someone and say, I want to buy a block of power next July. I can guarantee you that a hedge is going to cost you more than the day-ahead market, because the seller doesn't know what the power cost is going to be either. So they're going to tell you that they'll guarantee you a block of power, 50 megawatts or whatever, at $100 a megawatt hour. If you want to sign that contract, you're guaranteed that you'll get that power at $100 a megawatt, whether it's selling for $50 or $150. We have done some of that. You can also buy some futures, just like you buy grain futures and what have you. You know, that's going to a commodities market and basically asking to buy various groups of power within a price range. This year we did some of all. Last year and a half ago, I guess, we bought power primarily in the hedged market. And to be very honest with you, even though power was substantially cheaper, we were only paying in 2003, I believe, Terry, the average cost of power was in the $30 a megawatt range. Does that sound about right? 35, something like that. Our hedged power costs that year were actually slightly higher than we could have bought the power on the open market. So it is a bit of a crapshoot. I don't know tomorrow. Until tomorrow morning, I won't know whether tomorrow's power is going to cost us $89.90 or $95, or maybe it'll cost us $81. I just don't know that. If you all do, you ought to be out there making millions of dollars, because we're all gambling that tomorrow the energy costs are going to come down. I just read an article, if you want to go to the Wall Street Journal, on Friday, an article that says that the New York Mercantile Exchange, which is the exchange that deals with natural gas prices, is looking for natural gas in November to be in the $11.34 a million BTU range, and to exceed $12.45 a million megawatts, a million BTUs in December. We were paying less than 10 a month ago. We were paying 5-something 6 months ago. All of you that heat with natural gas are going to see that same cost this winter. All of us that heat with heating oil are going to see the same kinds of costs. Those are the costs we have to deal with. Those are the prices that we pay for energy. And, you know, we're not big enough. At 20 or 30 or 40 megawatts of power, we're a gnat. You know, we don't pick the phone up and call Constellation Power or PJM Network or anybody and say, guess what, Town of Smyrna is out buying power right now.
You know, give me a deal. They're going to laugh at us. If you aren't buying 200 or 300 megawatts at a crack, they're not going to talk to you. And that's where, you know, or if you don't own substantial amounts of generation. Yeah, DMACC has looked at generation. The problem is that you've either got to buy a substantial stake in a nuclear plant or a coal plant in West Virginia at $150 to $200 million, or you're stuck with natural gas-fired turbines that are not economical when natural gas gets to this range. Those are the things. We don't have $100 million in the town of Smyrna to go buy a power plant. So that's the other towns are the same way. We're all, you
know. One thing I think, Mrs. Hall, I want to make sure that when every time Mr. Hogue said we, he was referring to DMACC. He didn't mean the town of Smyrna.
Okay. I know that, and we go back then to the original question. In my private life, I know a friend of mine who, that's what he does. He sells power. So I understand what you're saying. You can buy it many different ways and many different amounts. I only ask that if we haven't looked into it and gotten the very most current information, if we're locked into another year and a half purchasing power the way we are, that we be equipped and knowledgeable to make another decision in a year and a half.
Well, believe me, we track energy prices every day. My electrical consultants track our power consumption every day. This is not an easy or, you know, nor is it an exact science.
I understand that, but we could do better than what we're doing is what I'm suggesting.
I would like to know how, but okay.
Okay. Well, have to put all your minds together and find out, because we as living in the town of Smyrna, and I've only been here since March, and I'm like blown away, and I'm going to stop suggesting people move here for that reason.
If I can add to this discussion or not, the town of Seaford, who's a member of DMACC, is passing their costs on to their customers dollar for dollar. They have the same kind of impact. Their energy costs them $90 a megawatt, just like it cost me last month. Their increases are substantially higher than ours on a month-to-month basis and have been since January. If you've watched the newspaper, Clayton just increased their PPCA costs. Milford has chosen not to, and they're running a deficit in their electric department. And quite frankly, what that means is at some point very soon, Milford's either going to have to raise their property taxes or start laying off employees and shutting down services. So there aren't lots of different options here.
Jim, did you want to make a comment?
Yeah, I just want to ask a question.
Jim Veit from Bon Air. Just how much profit?
Can you speak in the microphone?
In the microphone. Can you hear me?
Talk to the microphone.
How much profit is Bon Air making off the sale of electricity? Above your cost, above your, town of Smyrna, above your cost to buy it, to hire the employees, to pay their pension, to pay everything for your employees that handle electricity. How much?
Off electricity? This town, this council, not this council, previous councils made a determination a number of years ago that the electric revenue, the electric utility in this town would be run as a profit center to offset property taxes and other fees. Probably order of magnitude about
30%. 30% dollar-wise?
Dollar-wise, our electric utility is about an $8 million utility, total cost somewhere in that range.
30% of that is
about a little over $2 million
profit that right. You use to run the town.
Right. Now I should tell you,
then you have to offset that against taxes. I understand.
Let's understand. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it costs you $2 million something to run a police department, $2 million to run general administration.
Right.
That's right.
Left pocket.
Exactly.
So I don't want you to get to
that's right.
One way or
the other. Yep.
Yes.
My name's Ann Hanning. I live at 46 Raphael. I think all of us are upset about our electric bills. My husband used to work for a gas company in Jersey, and he has explained all the rates and everything to me. But who we should really be very unhappy at is right before I left the house tonight, I heard that before Rita hits the Miami Keys, crude oil went up the worst it has been ever in one day jump. That's where we nearly need to call our congressmen, our senators, and really put our powers. I mean, it's nice that everybody comes out here and you talk about these things, but the people making all the money, it all comes back to crude oil.
That's right.
And that I understand. And that's, you'll see it in the pump tomorrow. And the hurricane hasn't even hit there yet. And they did the same thing when it was $70 a barrel before Katrina hit 3 days ahead. They're gouging us, and I'm not saying, however the structure is set up for electric, I do understand it, but that's where we need to get our anger and get mad and stop. I have cut back driving whatever I have to do. I do not go. When I go out, I go one day, and I do it all in one day. My husband drives 87 miles a day each way because he won't be 62 till November. When that's over, he is retiring. You talk about electric bill, you ought to see that gas bill. He's putting $40 a day into the tank. That's a lot of money here. And everybody says, well, go buy a small car. What, for a couple months? So everybody's feeling this, and that's where our anger, I personally believe, no, I don't know about anybody else, but that's how I feel. I think we really need to get on our congressmen and all and get some kind of caps on this oil. They're making money hand over fist. The pharmaceuticals are nothing compared to the oil companies. Thank you, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask, add one more comment for the benefit of the audience. When Mr. J. Work said a few minutes ago, you know, turn off your air conditioners, turn off your lights, and immediately we all go, you know, what are we going to do? Stumble around in the dark. We all remember the gas crisis of the 70s, and we remember what we had to do. We remember that they lowered the speed limit to 55 nationwide just to sell a few gallons of gas. Unfortunately, with the situation we're faced with today, and that goes for every one of us because I get an electrical bill too, the first step is conservation, okay? Now, you don't want to turn your AC off, but you may have to turn it up 2 degrees. That will save a lot of money. Your light bulbs, you go to fluorescent bulbs, you're driving in your car. I have a pickup truck that gets low mileage. My wife has a Honda. We drive the Honda everywhere now, you know, because... And that, as individuals, that's our only control over this, and that's what we're all going to have to do. It's not going to solve the problem, but it's really our only way of reacting to this to try to keep our bills under control where we stay solvent.
I spoke earlier, Joe Renzi. A lot of these... issues we're addressing here in the county.
Mr. Renzi, can you take it closer to the mic so the audience can hear you?
A lot of what we're talking about is something that has happened the last month. What I was addressing was something that's happened the last 2 years before all this energy cost. You know, the bills that I'm talking about look like they started with the new meters. And the guy that I was talking about paying $40 a month, now is paying $450. This started 2 years ago before any of these bills. I still don't understand what the PPAC is. Is that an additional markup? Is that what that is? Okay.
No, well, it's a pass-through. It's a pass-through.
So in other words, my electric bill in this particular case is $753, and my meter demand was – no, my electric bill was $678. My PPAC was $753. My demand meter is 700. I don't know. I've had electric bills up and down the state. I got different places. I never read any of them like this. This is different from all my electric bills. This is the highest electric bill I have. I have places in different locations and in other states. And I don't have any bills that read like this or any of them. Okay. And some of them are in small towns. You know, I think that like the lady said, we need to look into what we're paying. There are newcomers here, and I think some of the expenses need to be divided up in more ways. But I don't know what we're spending the money on either. It's not that we got new sidewalks or anything's happened to the town. The town looks like a ghost town at nights. And you're saying use fluorescent bulbs. I don't even think half the people put any kind of bulbs on. If you go down, I've never seen a town look so dead at nights. I mean, it's actually scary. We don't have street lights. We don't have anybody with lights on. I mean, it's unbelievable. My daughter lives here. She has one light bulb on at night.
Excuse me. I like to say I was in Philadelphia in 1974. Center City, Philadelphia was dead at 5 o'clock. Nobody was there. What I'm going to say to you is that I disagree with you. This is a small town. There's not a whole lot of businesses to attract people anywhere, adults, kids.
I'm talking about residents.
I'm talking about residents, meaning why would you come downtown? We're trying to revitalize. No, we're trying to revitalize downtown. But I have to disagree with you about...
Where's that happened at?
Well, that's another issue. We're talking about electricity. But the bottom line issue is this. You've been told that towns around the state of Delaware have paid for their general funds. Those are the funds that we run the town with. Well, for some reason, councils, 20 years, 30 years, they don't want to raise taxes. But they'll raise electric rates because it's easier. Now, do we look at our electric rates and say, you know, in order to run this town, we have to lower the electric rates and raise taxes?
Not those, to interrupt you.
But no, but what I'm saying is that's
about all the impact fees and everything we're getting from all these.
That's another. We're talking about electric.
We're getting a lot of other revenues we've never seen here before.
We're talking about.
Besides electric.
I know. Or what we're talking about is. I don't mean to be argumentative, but we're talking electric right now. And if this town wants lower electric rates, then we have to raise our taxes.
And our taxes aren't any lower. Our taxes aren't any lower than anywhere else.
Well, that's. I beg to differ because
and
a lot
they're going to raise the taxes anyway. They're right.
How long have you lived in Delaware?
All my life, 54 years.
Okay, you haven't lived in New Jersey. I've lived in New Jersey, and my taxes there were outrageous.
That's
absolutely outrageous.
They're outrageous, right?
And all I'm saying to you is that this
what's everybody complain about there?
They complain about a number.
They complain about their taxes. That's why they're moving to Delaware.
That's correct. So what I'm saying is that because of our budget. And the way our town was established, the way a lot of towns were established. I learned this. I'm a newbie. I mean, I just came in here. I didn't understand it either. But now I understand the way the town was structured many years ago and many other towns. The electric paid for the taxes. Period. They can raise electric rates a lot easier than telling you your taxes are going up because then people get upset. My taxes are going up. But they could bump the electric rates around here and there a lot easier than taxes.
And see that's happening.
But what I'm saying is we have to, as a town, have to decide, do we raise taxes or do we raise the electric rates to pay for our general fund?
Well, I think we need to...
And then, you know, that's the bottom line.
According to property values.
Well, that's fine,
Property values are determined by what else is in town.
But what I'm saying to you is, you're right. You're absolutely right.
So, you know,
and so, it's a lot fairer to raise or to adjust taxes than to raise electric rates. Our electric company should be a cost zero, net zero company, meaning that we pay for our... electric power, we pay for our maintenance, we pay for future use, and that sort of thing. But it shouldn't be a vehicle for profit. We should be paying our town's general fund with our taxes.
Our taxes, our impact fees, our other fees.
Whatever. Yes,
right.
Absolutely.
And maybe some electric, but everybody's feeling we're getting gouged on the electric part.
Yes. And
if anybody doesn't look past this town or past this state or DMET to address the cost of fuel problem, especially since we're all fuel dependent, then all of us are being naive. We are not the reason that your bill is high. I mean, we could cut it in half, but then what are we going to take from?
You're not the sole reason, no.
No,
but,
at all.
But everybody, nobody else is paying different for gasoline anywhere in the country than we are.
I can switch from Texaco to Exxon. Just try to save on gas, but if I buy Exxon Corporation, I'm not going to save a cent.
But the other comment I'm going to make is I read in the newspaper about our state government has not taken a stand on this. Nobody's taking a step up and say, wait a second. You know, I happened to go to the hospital at 10 o'clock at night. I saw the price of gasoline. I came back at 12:30 at night. It went up in 2 hours, 25 cents. Mm-hmm. Now, are they trying to tell me that the gas in that tank costs 25 cents more than when they put it in?
Well, suppose it went up to $30 a gallon.
What I'm saying is
that the electric bill's done.
I understand, but what I'm saying is that our state government needs to take a step up and say to some oil, why are our oil prices, our gas prices, we have refineries in this state. Why are they so high? We have refineries right across the bridge in New Jersey.
Well, they're not high. That's my point.
Our gasoline prices are the top eight in the nation.
Everywhere else in the state, the electric rates are very reasonable. They're not high.
Because the other thing is interesting, but you missed the point. The state is regulating. The state has capped certain electric companies.
Right, I understand.
And that's not our situation, but they've capped them. But
disadvantage for the town, I realize that.
I know, but guess what? When they uncap it, then the reality is going to hit them as well. I mean, I hate to say this, but this is the real world. And, you know, as much as we try and do this and try and do that, we have costs. And for the people of Bonaire, I understand your needs. What I'm saying to you is, can we reduce the electric and increase taxes? All right, so then we have to look at that.
Yeah, I think that's already happening. We're increasing taxes. You think all these new homes are coming here paying less taxes?
I believe that's basically our only option.
That we didn't have 3 years ago.
I believe
you and I need to talk.
Sir,
don't know about New Jersey.
I know about New Jersey. I have a condo in New Jersey. I know what's happening.
Excuse me, Mr. Renzi?
Yes.
Mr. Renzi, I'm up here, sir. Hi.
Sound like you were back there.
Just one more point as far as the way we make profits from electric versus doing it in property taxes, okay? The reason that is it is inherently, and it's, I believe, the only thing that we can do to reduce the electric rates. It's the only thing we can do to change. It would be to shuffle those taxes from an electric charge into property tax. Now, the reason I feel it as a electric charge, it's unfair, is that if you have a $500,000 house up on the lake, okay, versus a one-bedroom condominium on the other side of town, obviously the man on the lake is going to pay a much greater, a property tax because he has much more property that's worth much more money, and that's how it works. But the way we have it, excuse me, sir, the way we have it now, where we have it put on as an electrical surcharge, when the man in the big house out on the lake pushes his toaster oven, he gets charged exactly what the little old lady in the one-bedroom condo gets charged on Social Security, gets charged on the other side of town. They both, for that action of using that electricity, end up getting taxed exactly the same, even though they have very different financial resources.
Suppose you were renting an apartment.
Somebody owns it.
All right, let's move on.
But the guy renting an apartment is paying, look what he's paying for electric bill here compared to Dover. That's a disadvantage for the guy that owns the apartment.
We need to move on.
Yeah. All right.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Kathleen Baber, and I live on Mount Vernon Street. And my question is, and I guess it's being brought up now, we do have this reassessment coming up. I know my house is like assessed at $80,000. My house is probably, I know I bought it 2 years ago at $140,000. I'm sure it will at least come up to that amount, and my taxes will double in this time. And so my question is, if our town as a whole goes up 30% in what we're getting on our property taxes, is the electric thing going to be addressed that we have the revenue now in this area? Are we willing to take less revenue in this other area?
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. Honest and true?
Yeah.
Hold you to your word? Okay.
Well, Mr. Mayor, if I could address that last point, I don't want to see the council overcommit itself here. The reassessment can be just a zero-sum game.
That's true.
This lady's house may go up in value, somebody else's house goes down in value, but your total, unless you change the tax rate, you're still going to end up with the same amount of tax dollars. So I don't want the audience to leave here tonight thinking that just because of the reassessment, your tax bill is going to go up or down, or it's going to affect the electric bill. Those two things interrelate, but not the way you think.
Yes, ma'am.
My name is Pat Gander. I live in Bon Air, Radnor. Okay. The only problem that I have is with the PPAC. I don't mind paying my electric bill. Whatever I use, I'll pay for it. But come, let me see. I have them all listed, 03, 04, and 05. 03, 04, and part of 05, down to May, whatever we used, we then paid in the PPAC. Come June, it was a profit of $1.41. July, $3.54. August, $9.75. September, $30.12. Above.
That's your PPAC?
Yes.
Ma'am, you need to understand. This is Mr. J-Work speaking over here. I want you to understand the PPAC, you are paying for what you're getting. That is the cost of electric. Dell Electric Cooperative has a PCA on its bill, too.
Okay.
And it's simply a pure pass-through.
All right. Now, what we used is what you charged all the way up until June. Then in June, my usage was $2.52, and the PPAC was $3.93. That was $1.41 different. In July, $9.29, you had a rate of 2.05. To figure that out, that's 1 month, $19.04. Then in September, $9.24, you had a rate of 4.26. Now, does this mean, I don't know how you come up with these figures or how it only lasts a month.
Can I answer that?
Yeah, sure.
Maybe Mr. Hugg can answer better than I can, but basically what that PPAC doing is simply reacting to the wholesale price of electricity that the town has to pay.
Mm-hmm.
They when the rate was originally set, let's assume that it was 10 cents a kilowatt hour.
Okay.
And that was built into your rate. And say the town was making 12, they were charging you 12 cents a kilowatt hour, and they were paying 10 cents for it. And that's what's called the embedded rate for your electricity. Now, 2 months move forward, and now the price of electricity to the town goes up a nickel. So now they're paying 15 cents. And if they kept selling it to you at 12 cents, they'd be losing 3 cents a kilowatt hour. So the PPAC would jump 3 cents. It would pass that 3 cents per kilowatt hour directly through
I
to you.
I understand what you're saying, but
okay.
How come a part of all the way up until June, whatever we used is what we paid on the PPAC? Then all of a sudden, in June, it changed, and we got charged above what we had used. In other words, you put in a new system.
Let me try and explain it, and I'll do the best. We had a PPAC for all of last year at basically 10 cents per kilowatt hour. Last year, our actual energy cost averaged under $40 a megawatt to buy. In January of this year, our cost for energy, is what it costs us to buy it, was $47.65. In February, it was 50 and a quarter. In March, it was 50.59, and in April, it was 51.23. Fairly constant. Okay. Now, along comes May, goes to 53.55, and then June, our cost is 74.37. That's what it cost me to buy that same kilowatt that I sold you back in January at $47.
Maybe I'm losing.
Okay.
But my point is, I just say your system changed, though.
No, the PPAC is intended to maintain the same cost, the same pass-through cost,
yes,
as a percent of the total, up or down. It can go down. It
right.
hasn't gone down,
right.
obviously.
I understand. It's okay. flexible.
And it is adjusted on a 12-month rolling average basis. In other words, what I have to do every month is sit down and figure out, how much energy I bought, how much energy I sold, how much revenue the embedded rate gives us at 45 cents a kilowatt, which has not changed since 1996, and what the PPAC has to be in order to have the same, to cover the difference between the embedded rate, 45 cents, and what it actually cost me. And that changes every month. And when my energy doubles, my energy cost goes up from $50 to $90, I've got to roll that forward.
I understand what you are saying, but these are my bills. I copied them all down.
I understand it. I've got
and
the same
numbers. And the usage was, if I used 929, I got charged $9.29 all the way up until June. Come June, now every one of these, whatever I used is what I was charged.
Right, you were charged, and your PPAC was 10 cents. 10%.
Nothing about 10 cents.
But it's 10%.
If I used 436, I got charged $4.36.
That's the PPCHC charge.
Yes.
I'm telling you.
But
that's charged at
June.
That's charged at a rate of 10 cents per kilowatt hour. Okay?
Whatever I used is what you charged me.
At 10 cents a kilowatt hour.
Okay.
In August, when that kilowatt hour that I sold you back 3 months ago that cost me $40 now cost me $90, I have to change. I can't charge you 10 cents a kilowatt any longer.
I understand it, but I don't understand how this... Now, you even print it in the paper that the rate used would be 2.05 as an old rate, and the new rate would be 4.26.
That's right.
Well, that's like we went from $9.86 to $19.04 to $39.36.
Unfortunately, that's true, and that's directly reflecting the wholesale cost of energy. If I was selling you gasoline, it's the same thing.
It just does not make sense.
I apologize. But
if you look at the figures from January to August, they almost doubled in cost. It's right here. It went from 47 to 89.
No, I'm just going to talk from June on.
Well, even June on.
July, August.
Yeah, the June bill, which is May usage.
Yes.
The May wholesale cost to the town was $53.55. That's what it cost me to buy a megawatt of energy. Okay? In August, that same megawatt of energy cost me $90. I can't control that. It cost me $40 more.
It just doesn't make sense.
Well,
you're right.
Yes, sir.
Gene Mullen, 48 Oak Drive. I'm not going to say anything about the electric rates because I've been to the finance committees and watched the committee agonize over the PPAC and everything else, so I know what they go through. I also know what Dave goes through every single day when he checks the electric rates. His heart probably stops in the morning. That's why he needs all that caffeine to get going again. Anyway, want to talk about one thing that's going on with Parkway Manor. It's a subdivision on the east side of the highway. I've been asked by some of my neighbors to speak to this. I wasn't going to, but they asked me, and I apologize, Dave. So don't be mad at me. They're replacing curbs on Mount Vernon Street and Oak Drive, and I don't know who laid them out, but they're changing the grading on the curb line, and they've installed the curbs anywhere from an inch high to a 5-inch lift over top of the sidewalks. Bramble's doing the work. I've talked to the foreman. There hasn't been any mention of replacing or raising the sidewalks. There hasn't been any mention of readjusting the grades on the gutters, on the curbs, to alleviate the flooded sidewalks when they get everything done. And everybody on Oak Drive and everybody on Mount Vernon Street that's affected, and there's probably 15 or 20 houses where the grades change enough, would like to know what's going to happen. And I know my house, I have about 4-inch difference between the curb and the sidewalk. This winter, when it starts raining and snow comes, I'm going to have 4-inch of ice sitting on my sidewalk because there's no place for it to go. And I don't know if the town figured that or if the engineer that was laying it out didn't lay it out right or didn't run his grades right or whatever. I know on Oak Drive and Mount Vernon, we never had a flooding problem. We never had a flow problem except for some very small areas. The curb worked fine. Everything went to the storm drains. And I don't know what happened. So I just would like to know. And the answer that if it is a problem, we'll address it. I need to know whether or not, number one, the curbs are going to be lowered or the sidewalks raised, and that's basically the only two options.
Thank you.
Would anyone else like to address the council? What is our kilowatt per hour charge?
Our base rate?
Yeah. Do you know off the top of your head?
The embedded base rate is 45 cents a kilowatt. That's the embedded rate for residential purposes. It's 45 cents. I'd have to sit down and look at your individual rates. I mean, if you're a residential customer, then your PPAC is your add-on, and that's $4.26 a thousand. Now you pay your 45 cent base rate on your usage, and then the PPAC is a percentage based on 1,000 kilowatt hours of use. That's how it's calculated. It's a markup. It's a markup that reflects the cost of buying energy. That simple. If we could buy energy and sell it to you at 45 cents, the PPAC would be zero. We can't.
Yes, ma'am.
Excuse me one second. Let me interrupt
1 minute. Before we move on, do we have anybody here, Dave, that can answer Mr. Mullen's question about the...
Actually, I addressed Mr. Mullen's question earlier, and I'm biting my tongue, but I will answer it again. Both Mr. Heger and I have both informed Mr. Mullen, both verbally and in writing, that we will fix whatever problems result when the project is done. If he wants that in writing on a formal piece of letterhead, I'll be glad to send it to him. We are aware that there are some grade differences out there, and they will be taken care of when the project's done. That's all I can tell you. I heard about this last week. Joe's been out and looked at it. Daryl's been out and looked at it. Both foremen from Bramble have been out and looked at it. I've been out and looked at it. The curbs are in some cases higher than the adjoining sidewalks. And if there are problems, we'll make whatever adjustment. The original curbs were in fact considerably lower than the normal design for a curb and street section. And that does create some difficulties.
Thank you. I didn't know you addressed it earlier, but at least it's for the benefit of the audience here. So. Yes, ma'am.
My question, because I also live on Oak Drive.
Okay.
And my curb is a lot higher than what it was. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
I forgot this. That $96 a year.
Joe, give your name again.
Oh, John Flynn.
John.
732 Radnor. At $96 a year, you charge everybody that lives in Bon Air. And on the bill, it says setup. Nobody seems to know what that setup is, other than you're taking $96 off every person that lives in Bon Air, and I don't know why you're doing that.
That's a bill in lieu of taxes. Your property is not taxed. The man that owns the land is paying a tax on the real estate. You are not paying a property tax on the structure. Your structure is not eligible for real estate tax. It's not titled as real property. The $96 is an annual fee that is charged in lieu of taxes to modular housing. It's been that way since that project started.
And that's the reason for it?
That's what it is.
Well, at least you answered. I thought you were just stealing that along with everything else.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn.
You already go back to Newcastle.
Yes.
That's not it. Jim Veit, Bon Air again. We just had our homes inspected, and we're waiting for some kind of notice to say what they are. We're expecting a letter. I don't know if we're going to be able to get a letter to each home, or we're going to be able to get a letter for everybody. I know you didn't find that much wrong. Thank God. But that was an inspection that you didn't do when those homes were built, and it should have been done, period. There were problems, but they've been taken care of by the owner of the property before, okay? The only inspection that was done on those homes were the footings were inspected before the concrete was poured. Nobody went under those homes after that until I asked for it to be done, the town council.
Could we?
Okay. Now, all I want to know is if everything's fine, that's fine. Just let us know. We're waiting for a letter from to each homeowner, or make it a mass letter to the development, one or the other.
Could we send a letter like that, Mr. Hogan?
Sure.
I don't have to get to the floor. I just wanted to ask you. You said Jim Fox inspected everything. I didn't see that in my place, and I got a whole lot less than 18 inches from the joist to the dirt. Yeah. And he said that was the code, 18 inches from the joist to the dirt. But he didn't take an effect. These ain't trailers. They're a manufactured home, and they got 10 inches of steel that runs all the way around. So that would only give you 8 inches. I don't think there's anybody can get under 8 inches.
We'll get a letter out to the association.
If he said he was in my house, he wasn't.
I wasn't the building inspector at that time when your house was placed.
You weren't?
No, sir, I was not.
Well, the town must have had somebody in there.
Yes, ma'am.
My name is Denise Lundy. I live on Tamar Drive. I just have one question, because we have the power plant there behind us on Tamar, and does the amount of power that we provide for the Walmart Distribution Center have anything to do with the amount of power that we're having to buy elsewhere? Is it affecting our rates any because we have concessions with Walmart to supply them so much power?
Walmart has received no concessions whatsoever on anything. They pay full tariff.
They do, the same as the rest.
And we do make an enormous amount of money.
Well, I figured it would as much, unless we had a concession with them prior to this increase in the gas prices. If you had established rate with them prior to the increases now because of the oil, then I could see where you'd be losing money with Walmart, and you'd have to outsource buying electricity from other companies to supply for your residents, and so then you're going to run into some issues. The other question I have is that, since Smyrna is marketable right now, because so many people are wanting to move to Smyrna, so you have a marketable town right now. People are moving south since Route 1 opened up. So passing along so many of the fees and the increase, not only through electric bills, through the developers that are coming in. Are you working on ways to do that besides just electric bills?
What's the impact fee right now, David?
We charge an impact fee for residential development, including the electric system impact fee. It's close to $3,000 in the Jim per house.
Yeah. That the developer pays for when he builds the house, gets his building permit, and then has to collect it from the new homeowner.
And when's the last time that went up? You know, that's what I'm saying.
It goes up every year, and the electric system fee was new this year.
Yeah.
And those fees are used for major capital projects like building a new substation, building a water tower, things that cost $3-5 million. They're not used for operating. They're not allowed to be used for operating costs.
And so maybe then too, you could look at kind of distributing some of the other funds. You know, I'm just making some recommendations of some other ways to look at it. And I would think, as marketable as Smyrna is, that would be a real big way to look at lifting, you know, raising your fees on your developers that are coming into town and into this area.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, I will close the public portion of the meeting. Thank you all for your comments. One note of interest I did want to make, and I neglected to do so earlier. I just wanted to inform the citizens of the town that the Citizens Hose Fire Company did again win the Governor's Cup this year and are to be commended. And I'd like the council, if they agree, to send them a letter of recognition and congratulations. Old business, 8B, second reading of the ordinance number 017-05. We don't need to vote on send a letter.
Okay.
This deals with penalties for vicious dogs. We've raised the penalties substantially. This is the second reading. What's the pleasure of the council?
I'll make a motion. We consider this the second reading of ordinance number 017-05.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. I'm going to pass the gavel to the vice mayor for the reason to make a motion. I would like to again like to make a motion to waive the building permit fee for the Smyrna School District for the new bleachers at the football stadium.
Cheerleader.
Okay, do we have a second for that motion?
Second it.
Discussion. Mr. Fox, did you were you able to come up with a tighter estimate of the amount from our last last meeting?
Based on the cost of the bleachers given to me by Mr. Roy today, on our permit fee, the town would waive a fee of $5,782.
Meaning that the balance of between $7,000 and $5,700 would be $1,300?
That was a guesstimate. The seven was a guesstimate that we had.
Yeah, this is a more accurate number.
The contract price that they're going with is $522,500 for the new bleachers. Based on our current structure of how to calculate building permit fees, it comes to $5,782.
Okay.
That's a hard number. We didn't have a hard number before.
Yeah, that was a guesstimate the first time.
And do you have an estimate of the town's labor to inspect this or anything?
Well, it depends on how they construct it. We do footing inspections. There is no close-in, so basically it's a final inspection. So we'd be out there like two times, breaking it out into phases. Even if they did it five times, you're looking at maybe $1,000 or less.
Any more discussion?
The original motion on this was for 7,000 some odd, and now you're telling us it's 5,700 near estimates.
I never had a figure of what the actual cost was until today.
Okay, so what exactly would we be voting on, either for or against? Would it be, in other words, have we decided that that is indeed the figure that Smyrna School District is going to get billed if?
Yeah, I've got the bids right here.
Yeah,
okay.
So I guess my procedural question is, we don't need to readjust the motion. The motion has changed to that dollar amount,
right,
instead of the original dollar amount.
Yeah, your original motion, if I remember, was to waive the building permit fees, and the only question that we weren't able to get a firm number.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Mr. Cahill, is that any more discussion? Rick, do you have any discussion on it?
Well, I've made some comments on it a couple times before as to my reasons why I'm not in favor of it. And tonight illustrates even more reasons based on the tightness we're experiencing on our fuel costs and whatnot. And I just don't want to defer more to the school district taxpayers than I do the town taxpayers. My responsibility lies with the town.
Mr. Evans?
Well, the reason why I said waiver it, and I've been thinking about it, everybody that's sitting out there in that room pays taxes one way or the other. So it's not, I personally feel, it's not going to hurt the town to waiver it, this $5,700. Because we're all our taxpayers. We're paying for it one way or the other. And we all got kids in school.
No, we don't. Well,
somewhere along the line, you've had kids in school.
Can we call it?
I think schools are very valuable to the community, whether you have children in the school or not. We're all citizens of the town. Our school system is very vitally important to each and every one of us, with or without children. However, as I said to Mr. Evans, the school has their budgets. We have our budgets. You establish your budgets on your priorities. We establish our budgets on our priorities. And I guess what I'm thinking is that I think your budget could withstand the money and the inspection money as our budget can also withstand it. I think that if you take on the responsibility of building a grandstand, you live in our community, you're in our community, then you should pay the taxes that everybody else pays in our community when they construct something. I know it's a school system. I know we pay taxes one way or the other, but it's also an element of, we have to do our budget as you have to do your budget. and you establish your priorities, and we establish ours. And I think that the precedent setting of waiving taxes can be fraught with danger in the future, depending on what you approach the council with. So I would appeal to the council to charge them the usual fees.
Mr. Cahill, you'd like to speak?
Yes, just one more thing. I, too, thought about this. It's why I asked it to be tabled, to give myself time to think about it. It's a difficult question. I would agree that if all other things were equal, that it wouldn't really make any difference. Do we take it out of the town? Do we take it out of the school budget? We're all taxpayers. The difference is that the school budget comes from a much larger area than the town of Smyrna. And that's, I think, I'm going to vote against this, and that's the reason why, because I feel that the money has to be appropriated from the exact people who are responsible for that area, and I feel that to impose this on the people of Smyrna to pay for all the outlying areas would be unfair for the people of Smyrna.
Can I make a comment?
Yes, sir.
It's important to also note that I believe the Smyrna School District is probably one of our largest utility users and also one of our largest employers. So we don't want to forget that fact either.
I can speak to the fact that our electric bill just went up $27,000.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I want to bring this to a vote. I'm sorry.
And I said we're paying our share also the electric increase. And we really feel that we're not building a home, we're building a grandstand, and it should not be the same rate.
Okay, bringing this to a vote. How's the council vote?
Yes.
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 No.
No.
3-3.
Motion fails. Thank you very much.
3-3.
That motion fails. We have in our packet, is this the letter to Mr. Hugg? Do you want to explain the letter to the elected officials?
Yeah, if I can find it. Following the council meeting last week and the presentation by the by Mr. Cahill and his and the ad hoc Route 13 committee, council asked me to draft a letter to Senators Vaughn and Cook and to Representatives N.S. Bethany Hall Long and Thornburg, which is in your packet, basically asking them to make some of their I think it's called community road money, community development money. Available so that we can begin a project on Route 13 to beautify the road. I would like to point out that in 1985 there was an article in the Smyrna Sun-Times, the headline of which basically said Route 13 improvements needed now. It's kind of interesting that 20 years later we're still trying to get DelDOT to recognize that this road is no longer the superhighway it once was, and do some improvements for pedestrian safety and aesthetics and mobility. This is again the number one rated project in Kent County in the 2007 state fiscal year 2007 transportation improvement program. And as you all know, Secretary Hayward has chosen to spend all of the monies available for a bridge and a ramp in Wilmington. And I just think we need our fair share, and that's what the letter asked for.
Is there a motion to send the letter?
So move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. 8E, Mr. Hugg.
I'm sorry. Status of the Attorney General investigation. I realized this was on the agenda this morning and made two inquiries to the Attorney General's office, one to the state solicitor and one to a deputy AG that had also communicated with us about 3 weeks ago. I did not get a response from either of those, so I have nothing new to report.
I have one for us at the next meeting.
As soon as I get a response.
I have a comment about this. We're the fourth largest town in Delaware. We asked the Attorney General, we requested the Attorney General of our state to look into the nature of and investigate our flawed election. To date, I don't know if anybody has received anything.
We did.
And what was it? What did it say?
A memo from Mr. Hugg. Mark.
Not from the AG's office, though, have we?
No,
we have not received anything from the AG's office. I have to say this. That, to me, that is a travesty. What kind of state do we live in? We're the fourth largest city. You're the citizens of the state. We asked the Attorney General to do something, and we don't even get, well, we received your request. We don't even get that. I want this council to stand up and do something and say to the Attorney General, come and investigate our election as we asked you. Please. Do your job. So I make a motion that we write a very strong letter to the AG and make it public that the Council of Smyrna wants our election investigated. We want an answer. Just a yes or no would be helpful. But just the common courtesy and decency of responding to this town's council, I think, is absolutely a necessity of our Attorney General. And I make that motion that we write a very strong letter and make this letter an open letter, either publish it in our newspapers or whatever, but make it an open letter to the Attorney General. Please respond to our request. This was 2 months ago, and we need a response.
I'll second that motion.
Well, I was going to second it because based upon not only her lack of respect for the town of Smyrna, but her lack of respect for the institution of our criminal justice system, which she is supposed to be heading. She is doing a very good job.
And you'll bring the letter back to the council for review? I think that's more than appropriate.
Well, I think the council ought to sign it individually. I don't think this should be a letter from Mr. Hugg. I think this should be a letter that's signed by each and every one of us, including you, Mr. Jaywork, as our legal advisor, suggesting to the Attorney General that she's not doing her fiduciary duties to the town of Smyrna, if you believe that. I don't know if you believe that or not, but I think she's not doing her fiduciary duties to the town of Smyrna.
I don't really know what she's doing. I agree. It's been a long period of time. There may be things taking place that we don't know about. I have no idea.
Well, is any response, even a smoke signal, I mean, just something, fly a kite, tell us you got it.
Tell us something.
I agree with Dr. Shervinek as far as the members of council signing it. However, I have to defer to you, Mr. Jaywork. Do you think it would be appropriate for you to sign it, or would that be something just kind of inappropriate? What do you think? Just give us your feelings.
My feeling is I shouldn't sign it. I mean, I feel like
it's a surprise.
Yeah.
Chicken.
Invisible.
I tried to walk a very thin line here and not come down on any side of this, you know, this contentious thing. And I feel like putting my name on the letter is like I'm endorsing one side or the other. I think this is purely a local matter that's got to be decided locally.
I agree with him. He's not an elected member of the council.
Okay, that's
I would
fine.
Ask that you amend that's the fine. Motion to include all members of council, but not Mr. Jaywork.
So amended.
And we're going to bring the letter back for review.
Next week, the next meeting, yes. And we'll send it at that time. It's 2 weeks away. I suggest that we having a special session of our council in order to approve the letter. And I'd be happy to write that letter. We have a quick 15-minute, and I'll buy lunch. And we'll approve the. But I mean, we ought to
lunch if we sign the letter.
What I'm saying is, I think we ought to do this, and I agree with all due respect to everyone. We ought to do it fast. And I was hoping the papers would report this, and an open letter would be fine if we would do
this
an open
is
letter.
Not unusual for her. I hope you understand that.
Well, that's okay.
Isn't Jean? Not at all. She could be 6 months doing something on this.
But that was then. This is now. We're the Smyrna Council.
Now she wants to be a judge. Not interested now.
I would suggest that I'd be happy to write a letter, circulate among the council, and get it out before the next meeting.
Good. All in favor?
Aye.
All right.
Passed.
AF, the facade improvement matching grants, Mr. Hugg.
Thank you. There are two of them that are before you. They've gone through the Historic Review District Review Board. The first one is for improvements at 138 North Main Street. The amount of the requested grant is $1,050. And the second one is for 1 North Main Street. And the amount of the grant is $4,065. In both cases, these property owners have committed to make improvements consistent with the historic character of their buildings and the town ordinance, and approval is recommended by the review board. And I would suggest that if you want, you can do them in one motion.
Mr. Hugg, excuse me if I may, I'd suggest we do them in two motions,
okay,
just because there are two there's a little separation.
I'll
explain when we get there.
Okay, that's fine.
Let's do 1 North Main Street first.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Sorry, 1 North Main Street, okay.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I'd like to make the motion on 138 North Main Street, and the motion I'd like to make is that we recommend approval of this application contingent upon the board's recommendation to council that the approval of this matching grant is contingent upon the owner using the appropriate mortar. Okay, that was something they noted in their thing. So
appropriate mortar.
Yeah, something about if you put new concrete in, it'll start breaking the bricks apart. We have to find an old concrete. So because there was that stipulation in this, I wanted to separate them. Therefore, I make the motion.
Second.
So we approve.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Mr. Hugg, annexation request, 32 South Clement Street.
Yeah, there is one correction. The cover sheet, the signature page refers to it be zoned highway commercial. That is incorrect. It is the applicant requested to be zoned R3, which is consistent with the comprehensive plan and the adjacent properties. This would simply begin the process. If you were to make a motion to accept this request, then you're indicating to this property owner that you're willing to consider the annexation, and from that we'll set a date for a public hearing. It'll go to planning and zoning, and it'll come back to you for final action.
It's a pleasure, Council.
I'll make a motion. We approve the annexation request, 32 South Clement Street, party SAP, with the understanding that the statement of that the property be zoned highway commercial is
residential 3.
Is residential 3.
Right, right.
And that would be my motion.
Thank you.
Second. All in favor?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, sir.
Make a quick comment. Looking at the map, it's not clear to me whether or not this property is bounded by other town properties or not. Yes. You know, Mr. Hugg, whether...
Yes, it is. It is contiguous to town.
Obviously that, but I mean, is it totally surrounded by town properties, or is it out by itself with a small contiguous part? I just want to reiterate,
it's close.
You know, we have these spot annexations, and they just, you know, they're difficult for us. I don't know whether or not, I certainly have no problem with the council moving forward today on this, but if there's some way we could canvas that area, see whether or not there are more properties could be brought in at the same time, unless these properties is it more than one property, Mr. Hugg?
No, it's actually a number of lots, but it's one property, and it is bounded on two sides by the town.
I think it almost squares up that whole block.
It squares up that block,
except for maybe a corner piece.
That's just not clear from this map. If that's what it is, that's fine. I just have a concern about annexing that sometimes.
In the future, maybe when we get these maps, could you highlight the town boundary?
Sure.
Then we could all,
yeah,
we'd know then what it was.
Yeah, if we can, if we get our technology working here one of these days soon, we'll actually even be able to project everything up on the screen and show you all the information.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. 9B, I'd like to appoint Councilman Shervinak to the Route 13 Improvement Committee. Is there a motion?
Make a motion.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Hugg, proposed amendments to Board of Adjustment legislation.
I'm going to defer this one to Mr. Jaywork.
Okay, this is basically just some legislation. Actually, this was we attempted to get this passed 3 or 4 years ago, and we're trying to come back and get it done again. This is two things dealing with the Board of Adjustment. One is very simple to understand. Right now, if you come in, if you need a one-inch variance because your property encroaches 1 inch into the side yard setback because your surveyor screwed up or the builder messed up or maybe your house just moved, you have to come to the Board of Adjustment, at least technically you do, unless somebody blinks. This legislation would allow a town council, if it chose, you wouldn't have to do this, but you would at least have the power to create basically an administrative variance procedure to grant dimensional variances up to 1 foot. Now, you might decide, well, we only want to make it 3 inches or 6 inches or a foot, but you could then authorize your building department to issue a variance if somebody comes in and needs a variance of less than 1 foot. And that would obviously save a lot of time, effort, and expense hearing variances for very minor adjustments. That is one bill. The other bill is legislation that right now, and under Delaware case law, if there's an appeal from a Board of Adjustment decision to the Superior Court, and the Superior Court finds that the record is incomplete, there's not enough evidence, you know, that maybe the minutes of the Board of Adjustment or the decision is inadequate. Court's only remedy right now is simply to reverse the Board of Adjustment decision and throw the decision out. It cannot remand the case back to the Board of Adjustment to allow them to open up the hearing and correct, fill in the record, make better findings of fact or whatever. And so this bill would amend Title 22 to accomplish that as well, to give the Superior Court the authority to remand cases back to the local Boards of Adjustment. This is here before the town tonight. I basically sent this out to all the other towns that I represent on my letterhead, asking them to support this legislation in the next session of the General Assembly. And, of course, we also will be working through the Delaware League of Local Governments to try to get all the towns in the state and the league itself to do this. So all we're asking tonight, and it's not going to, nothing's going to happen immediately, but if you pass this resolution, we'll have it in the file, and then at the appropriate time we can present it.
Supporting the
supporting these two bills.
What's the pleasure of council?
I so move that we approve the resolution.
Second. All in favor?
A little discussion just for a second, please. Mr. Jaywick, would you just explain to me, like, why is this necessary? Just in plain English. I don't really grasp the entire subject.
Well, the Delaware code right now that sets up, creates the zoning power for towns and establishes boards of adjustment says basically that if you want to get a variance, you have to go to the Board of Adjustment. You can't just go to the building official and get your variance. And so this would create that power in the planning department or the building department, I should say, because they can't grant a variance. Mr. Hug, Mr. Fox, I could not go in and say my builder screwed up my house. It's 3 inches over the line. Can you just give me a building permit? He'd say no. You got to go to the Board of Adjustment. Then you got to pay what, $350 to go to a Board of Adjustment hearing.
Is this a frequent problem for us?
It is
frequent enough to be.
Yeah, it's frequent enough. I mean, it's these kind of de minimis adjustments or variances occur fairly regularly, and they are often just the result of a surveyor is off a little bit or the builder. Typically, what happens is the builder for whatever reason moves the garage over just a little bit To cause a property owner to go back through the full Board of Adjustment process is both time consuming and expensive. And then the other piece is that once the board rules, then you've got to go to court to correct if there's any additional information that comes before the Planning Commission, before the Board of Adjustment.
What the statute says right now is that the Superior Court, when one of these cases comes up, can either affirm the decision of the Board of Adjustment or it can reverse the decision of the Board of Adjustment, or that's basically it. It cannot send it back down to the Board of Adjustment for clarification.
I spoke to Chairman Neiser last week, and I don't know if you're aware of this, Mr. Hug or Mr. Fox, but I understand we have a gentleman that will be in front of the Board of Adjustment or is going to apply. He rebuilt a burnt-down duplex, neglected to get it surveyed, and after the fact found out it was 14 inches shifted to one side of the property line. Now, he can't subdivide that and put homeowners in there. He would have to leave it as a rental property. And that's a perfect example.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing. And although it may not happen, maybe it only happens in the town of Smyrna once every couple of years, multiply that times, what, 57 municipalities in the state.
We'll call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. Proclamation thanking the American Legion. The town of Clayton also passed almost the identical proclamation at their meeting last week. It's just recognizing our local American Legion for their relief work on the Katrina hurricane disaster that hit the Gulf Coast. They're putting it in a package. I was in a meeting with them this afternoon at 4 o'clock. They have a truckload of material heading down to, I believe, Mississippi on the 13th of the month. And they're doing great work, and they asked to be recognized, and there we have it. What's the pleasure of the council?
Make a motion. We approve this proclamation.
Second.
All in favor?
I have a discussion. I looked at this proclamation, and I said, I appreciate the American Legion doing what they're doing. I don't know exactly what they're doing, and I didn't know what they're doing. But I do know that the town of Smyrna is doing a lot more than what the American Legion is doing, and it's private, and it's public, and it's churches, and it's a lot of people working to help the victims of this hurricane. And in fact, there is two families existing, two or three families that live in our community right now that need our support. And I would say that the American Legion is part of the entire community, and I would want to amend this proclamation, frankly, and say thanks to the American Legion, and thanks to the churches, and thanks to the individuals who are participating, and we have an individual sitting at our council seat who are actively helping the victims of this hurricane. To me, again, I'm not speaking against the American Legion. I think they're a fine organization, but I would extend this proclamation beyond the American Legion to include all those who have helped and will continue to help the families of the victims of Katrina.
Well, I think that's a great idea, but how this typically works is these different organizations come to us from time to time for proclamations and resolutions, and this was drafted by them. I think we'll probably see the Smyrna Ministerium request is probably the wrong word, but want to receive the same recognition in the very near future and other organizations, and I look forward to also bringing those forward too. So this was drafted by them, and I would hope we would honor our longstanding.
I just another point of order. Yes, I understand. Does anyone who has done anything for anybody that comes to our council and requests a proclamation, are they eligible to?
Yes, sir.
So individuals can come.
Yes.
I guess what I'm thinking is that I have to look in the town charter. I'm not sure, but I think it's a bit unusual that that anyone who comes with a proclamation that and we have no way of knowing that what they did or said they did is actually true. I know Dover has a committee of people who will look at the request for proclamations to make sure that it's accurate and fulfills the standards of their council. So
there's I agree to an extent, but I don't want to deny this proclamation, because if you take collectively all the individuals and organizations that contributed to the Katrina aftermath and tragedy down there, we could never guess what it would amount to. Some people are anonymous no matter what good things they do. And so, you know, churches and organizations make contributions, and they're not public, really. So if somebody wants to come forward, sometimes they are, yeah. But, I mean, they don't come out and say so. But yeah, collectively, it's tremendous what people have done from this town.
Well, I just like to recognize that as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We had a motion, didn't we?
Yes.
Let's call a question. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Mr. Hug, hiring a temporary staff for data conversion?
Yes, I have on your desk tonight the a request that normally would have gone to the Personnel Committee first. Unfortunately, because Mr. Presley has been ill, we've not had an opportunity to do that. As I indicated in my manager's report both this week and previously, we are actively involved with SunGuard HDE to get the new software system up and running. There is a great deal of data conversion that needs to be done between CapSoft and HDE. There's also a lot of data that SunGuard will need to that will ultimately need to have in the SunGuard system to take full advantage of that operation. What I am asking is permission to hire three temporary people to begin work by the 1st of October, essentially through the end of February, which will allow us to commit to our March 1st go-live date for utility billing. And I'd like a motion to allow me to do that.
Just for information, Mr. Hugg asked me to speak to Mr. Presley. I did. He was aware of this, and not that we need his endorsement, but as chair of the Personnel Committee, he tells me he supports his temporary hiring. What's the pleasure, Council?
So move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. And please let the record reflect that Mr. Presley is excused because of illness. He expects to be back at the next meeting. He's had a little setback late last week. Motion to adjourn.
No, I have other council business. What? As I traveled down Glenwood Avenue, there's a sign that is over the road that says concerning the American Legion Ambulance Company to give to Katrina. It also mentioned to call the mayor's office with the number of the mayor's office, I guess. I'm just wondering who authorized that, how much did it cost, and did we prepare the staff of our city hall to accept those phone calls and deal with them when people called? If somebody called up with a truckload of frozen turkeys and wanted to bring them to city hall, I mean, what would we do? So I'm asking a question. Who authorized the sign? What were the costs, and why was the number put for the mayor's office when I don't think it was authorized by anybody in council? Not that I oppose Katrina effort, but I guess if the American Legion Ambulance Company is the primary on the signage, then why would they call the mayor's office?
The banner, I'm active on that committee. We're doing a lot of great things. We have a truckload of material going. Mrs. Cahill, I know you agree with this. We have a lot of great stuff going down to Mississippi. The town of Smyrna routinely hangs banners. We have a sign guy in town, thank God, by the name of Bill Bright, who donates banners. Let me answer the question. And Mr. Bright was good enough to donate that banner. Unfortunately, it did come down. Ripped apart and was re-sewn and re-hung. It is hung by the electric crew, and Mr. Hugg is aware of the number being on the banner. Unfortunately, we haven't received any calls that I'm aware of. Carol was going to pass them on to me if we received them via email to give direction to folks to drop turkeys off at the American Legion. And I think it's a great thing, and I look forward to doing it in the future.
Okay, I understand. I guess when we involve the council, isn't not proper that we involve the council? And I mean, is that?
Would you like to attend the meetings? I'll let you know when they are.
No, the council meetings. Meaning that I guess that it had town business on the banner. I don't. You know, if we're prepared to handle that, that's great. But I think as council, we need to approve. And I'm sure Mr. Presley would agree with it because he didn't want a letter to go out from this council without him looking at it under my signature, that we approve any kind of activity like that as a council. Not that I'm opposed to it. I agree with it totally. But I think – I don't know if the town staff knew that was going to happen. I don't know if – you know, I don't know. Who knows what's going to happen when you put the number of a town office and for donations? And I don't know if they're prepared for that. So, well, or does that also allow us to put any banners up there that we want? Or
the good news is I think we're well equipped to handle that type of charitable work.
I think I'm appealing to you to come to council, as I was asked to come to council for approval of a letter. Now, this is a banner over a public area that has a phone number of our office that's going to bring work to our town staff. It seems to me that if I have to have a letter, that that activity should be approved by council as well.
All right, thank you. Anything else?
Yes, I have other business. I thought I could get through one meeting of this town council without getting angry about something. But, Mr. Schaefer, why did you just single my wife out of the audience and a council involved in a discussion involving the town council where the audience has had their chance to speak? They've had their 3 minutes at the microphone. I did not hear my wife make any remarks, and I'm wondering why you just suddenly singled her out of this audience and made comments to her.
I'll discuss that with you after the
meeting. No, sir, you won't. You'll either discuss it with me right now, or you can let all these people know that you had absolutely no reason to do it. But I'm asking you a direct question, and I would like to know. This is a point of order, and I want to know why you would specifically, my wife, but any other citizen in this room, suddenly, in the middle of council discussion, reach out and proactively make a personal comment to a member of this town that's sitting out in the audience. I would like to know why you did that, sir.
Address it to me after the meeting. Thank you.
Well, I'll address it right now. I think you're way out of line. I think your behavior is incredibly inappropriate, and I would appreciate it, sir, if you would leave my wife and any other citizen here out of our discussions, okay? Whatever personal problems you have with my wife or any other citizen here, sir, you deal with them in another venue.
Thank you.
Okay, but if you're going to insist on doing this, if you're going to insist on doing this, sir, then I'm going to insist on responding to you. Point of order, Mr. Schaefer. I was speaking. Thought I could get through a meeting without being interrupted, too, by you. But should you do this again, I will take you to task, sir. I'm going to ask for a motion from this council. I'm going to make a motion right at this point that Mr. Schaefer be instructed to maintain this meeting according to parliamentary procedure, according to normal behaviors, and that he cease and desist in the future of addressing any member of the public, and especially my wife, sir. And I'll ask for a second.
And I second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No.
Motion carries.
So what was the count?
Got three yeses, motion fails. Is there a motion to adjourn?
No, no. I want a voice count, please. I want to hear a voice count.
I'll poll. My vote was yes?
My vote was yes.
I voted no. I don't think Mr. Renfitz didn't vote.
I didn't vote.
You voted yes, motion fails.
So that's three votes.
Correct.
Three votes to pass the motion, one vote no, and you say the motion fails, sir?
Correct.
What form of mathematics are you using? You
need four votes.
It's four votes under the charter to pass any.
You've got to read the charter, Mr. Cahill.
That's right. Yes, sir, I have read the charter.
Let's not break
yes,
the charter.
Yes, powers necessary to carry a vote. I apologize,
is
you are correct. It does
why
take four
why don't we
votes.
Worry about reducing electric rates and cut the gamesmanship at every meeting.
Okay, sir, why don't you stay off my wife and we won't need to get in the
is
subject.
Is there a motion to
and
adjourn?
That's all I have to say on the subject. Watch your manners.
You have a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you.
Do that again. I'll have you arrested.
Good.
Julie, I'll talk to Pat back after the meeting.
We're not talking to Pat.
Where you at?